What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, the Iceman. Is it icy in Ottawa, Josh? How you doing?
Not yet. It's going to snow tomorrow, but I'm as icy as the Raptors in March 2021.
Ooh, okay. I like that. And the banger in the paint from an undisclosed location. I swear, this guy's... Yo, Josh, you remember that episode of The Simpsons when Groundskeeper Willie is like living in a furnace somewhere and then he turns into into Freddy Krueger?
I'll haunt your dreams!
That's a banger in the paint. Rajon Walia right now hiding in a furnace somewhere. How you doing, Raj?
You know what? I'm hiding down in a bunker, but I'm real emotional after reading Norm Powell's Players Tribune article. So I might shed a few tears during this pod.
Oh, man. Let's hit that first. Josh, did you read this?
No, I didn't read that. I saw it on my timeline, and then I saw the Lou Dort story through TSN, and I had to watch that instead. So I made a choice. I think it was the correct choice, too.
You chose the Canadian kid instead.
Oh, yeah. Lou Dort's story is great.
That's very on brand of you. Raj, how emotional was it reading Norm's essay?
Honestly, the best thing about reading Norm Powell's Player Tribune article is it was covering a lot of different things from the time he actually got out before his pre-draft workout for Toronto, and he talked about doing a windmill dunk in that training session, and he felt like Toronto was the place to hit for him, and to the last goodbyes with Lowry and Freddie, and also his time with DeMar, and he shows some candid stuff that you don't really hear about that much. And obviously the best thing about it is I think he knew his role. Like, he says that when you look back at this Raptors team, the team that won the chip, you're going to talk about Norm, you're going to talk about Kawhi. Oh, sorry, you're going to talk about Lowry, Kawhi. You might even talk about Freddie, Siakam, but you'll always remember that Norm was a pretty solid player. And, honestly, Josh, you're missing out. Like, you know what? Maybe tonight when the Raptors lose again, you just pop it open, have a nice read, sip a glass of wine, and cry yourself to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad way to go to sleep nowadays. So, I mean, it's better than thinking about what's happening in the world right now, right?
That's wonderful. I mean, you guys are so optimistic about this. Come on.
And also, if the Raptors lose tonight, they should be, like, relegated to the G League. They're playing an OKC team that doesn't even have Pokuševski.
Big name out, eh?
This guy's talking about a team who just lost to the Pistons.
I mean, if they lose to Detroit and OKC back-to-back, and they've already lost, like, what, 10 out of 11 games? Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's a good thing. I really hope they do lose tonight, but still, man. You lose, like, we could beat that team. Us three and a couple of the guys from our crew, we could beat OKC tonight.
Maybe if we were in our prime. You know, I'm kind of washed up these days.
Now you got to practice in yesterday. You're good to go.
My feet hurt after shooting around outside. Man,
your body's feet hurt?
Yeah, I think it's the shoes.
He's old, man.
It's got to be the shoes.
Man, you have like the opposite effect of the Jordan commercial. Huh? It's all in the shoes.
Yeah, man. It's the concrete does not do well for me with these shoes. Anyways, let's move on because we got to get into this. A couple of guys got bought out last week after the trade deadline. We're looking at LaMarcus Aldridge, who was rumored to be going to the Miami Heat at the time. He ended up in Brooklyn. Blake Griffin, we already know, ended up in Brooklyn. We already covered that a long time ago. Andre Drummond, who was rumored to go to the Celtics for a while. And obviously he ended up in LA because apparently it's his dream to play with LeBron, which is... I mean, that's not bad. That's pretty cool, actually. Getting to play with like a guy that you've always dreamed of. That's neat. And Josh, on a personal note, Gorgui Dieng, straight to San Antonio. You know, that's your guy.
I feel like that was a pivot moment in the Raptors season now, you know?
Not getting Gorgui?
Yeah, because they could have gone in that direction, I think, and paid him a bit more money than some other teams, I think. And they decided, nope, we're just going to stay the course. We're going to sit out Lowry with these ridiculous excuses for injuries. And we're going to lose as many games as possible. And I'm happy about it. So, because honestly, like, you put anybody in that lineup, like anybody decent, I think they win a lot more games than, you know, they've actually won the last, you know, 10, 15 games. You get any type of able body, they'd be fine. So going back to the buyout market, obviously Drummond's a big one. I mean, there's been rumors that Gasol might get waived now, which makes
some
sense.
Bring him back to Toronto.
Yeah. No. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I like that idea,
yeah,
actually.
It would help the tank. Come on, man.
Yeah, you're right. It's actually a pretty good idea, actually. I think Mark would be very happy about that at this point. But, yeah, I mean, getting Drummond in L.A., that's pretty big for their regular season hopes in terms of, you know, making sure they don't get in the play-in game, especially if AD doesn't come back right away, even though he's dropping tea leaves that he's going to be back in the next couple weeks. But just having another guy in there that you can play 25 to 30 minutes a game and get solid production from and beat some of these really bad teams that are coming up so they can hopefully stay in the 1-6 range in terms of seeding, I think that's pretty big for them. In the playoffs, it's a whole different story. Like having Drummond and Harrell as your center rotation isn't great, which is going to lead to AD playing center anyway. But, yeah. You know, I mean, he's... Obviously, he's not a very impactful player in terms of winning or what he's shown so far, but he's very productive when he plays.
Yeah, this is like a huge arms race, clearly between the Nets and the Lakers. Obviously, the Lakers had the two top five players, and now obviously AD and LeBron have been injured. And I think Drummond, actually him coming to the team right now is good because he'll be able to get a lot of touches because he didn't really play for the last like 2 months. Right, so he has to play himself into shape, and he'll have a lot of opportunity being the starting center for that team, and they're going to need some of his production. And again, I think the Lakers should be okay. They should be able to squeeze by close to 500 with their upcoming schedule, and then hopefully LeBron and AD come back by the end of April, and things will continue. But let's just talk about LaMarcus Aldridge and the Nets, because again, he hasn't played much with the Spurs, and he's clearly a step behind, but he helps them with spacing. He has another body in a position in the front court. They didn't have to give up anything. And again, it just increases their permutations on how many lineups they can have that are like different ways to beat you. Like they obviously have Harden, Kyrie, and KD. And then you have Blake Griffin and LaMarcus. So they have five guys that were All-Stars in 2019.
You know, for me, I'm not a big fan of the move, to be honest. I mean, I understand that you're getting him for nothing, but you have so many guys now that unless you've had the talk with them, telling them, like, you're not going to play in a lot of these games, or you're going to play maybe 10 minutes in a lot of these games, especially come playoff time, then if they're expecting you to have, like, 15 to 25-minute roles off the bench, then they're going to be unhappy and the lineups are not going to work as much, but I think there's an expectation going into this that LaMarcus knows that Blake Griffin's going to play over him off the bench in a lot of lineups. Claxton's going to play over him in a bunch of different lineups. He's not going to play a bunch of games in the regular season. So, you know, as the saying goes, if they help you win one game in the playoffs, that's all that really matters. And he's definitely capable of doing that. So in that sense, it's a good signing. But they just have so many guys now. It just makes me wonder if they're going to have the chemistry come playoff time and get all these lineups to play together in a way that, you know, they're actually prepared, you know, come round two and round three when it actually matters in order to get the production that they need out of the bench unit.
Yeah, but I think one thing that's really just like, this is a quick take. I think the Nets are onto something, obviously, with the fact that them having so much star power, like they can actually have a 1A and a 1B unit. And depending on who they play, they can now work because, like, we always see historically teams in the playoffs play 7-8 guys max. They can actually have two solid lineups of five. And depending on who you're playing or depending on who's hot or the matchup, you can play one match, like one lineup a bit more. You can play the Joe Harris, the Jeff Green lineup, or you can have a second lineup that comes in. So there's no real break for the opposing team. It's not like your bench is going against their bench. It's like your starters have to play their starters, and then when your bench comes in, you're playing Brooklyn's second starting lineup.
Yeah, but you can't do that in the playoffs, so you need like a set lineup where guys know what kind of minutes they're going to be getting, because as you know, basketball is all about rhythm, rotation, and guys knowing going in, like, I'm going to play 15 minutes a game, this is my role, this is what I'm going to be doing. And I think, I don't know, I just think they have too many guys now. I think that getting Blake, you know, you're getting him to be the power forward off the bench, And then getting LaMarcus, they already have, you know, a few centers on that team that, I mean, DeAndre is comparable to him, obviously. I think Claxton's a better player than him right now, to be honest, especially defensively. And that's what they need from that position.
Claxton is definitely better than Aldridge right now, but, I mean, we haven't really seen LaMarcus Aldridge be optimized this year either, right? In San Antonio, the team basically just ran him off the floor. His own team ran him off the floor. Like, how often does that happen? So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, on a personal note, as long as Uncle Jeff Green gets his minutes, I don't really care who plays on this team. You know how it is, man. Jeff Green just needs to get his time, and then, you know, Blake Griffin or LaMarcus Aldridge can play, like, close it down. But, I mean, both guys are saying that, you know, they're prepared for the bench role, that they're prepared to, you know, limit their minutes, limit their touches for the best of the team and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we've heard that by almost every player that goes to a different team, right? Every player is willing to adapt to whoever's around them and whatever that they need to do, whatever the coaching staff tells them to do. But when push comes to shove, once it's like, you know, second round, not even third round, like second round, and Blake Griffin is playing 10 minutes a game, 12 minutes a game, is he going to be salty? You know, this is a guy who was making $35 million a year last year. You're telling me his ego is just going to, like, take a back seat? He's going to be sitting in, like, the second row of the COVID benches? I don't know, man. It seems wary. I'm wary of the situation, too. It's I understand, like, the need for, or not the need, the desire for a team full of all-stars. Because, obviously, you know, if you can pack your team, why wouldn't you stack your team? At the same time, man, the personalities have to mesh. And, I mean, Harden fitting in alone there is already incredible with Kyrie, so.
All right, got a quick question for you guys. Can you, in order, out of those five guys, like, those are the five primary big names on that team. But besides Kyrie, KD, and Harden, what would you say are the players coming off the bench in order of priority? Like, who are the players that deserve the most minutes?
Jeff Green.
Of course you're going to say that. I think the bigger question is who starts, because, you know, in the second and third round, the one good thing about this Nets team is they might just have so much talent, they might be able to plug and play whatever player is necessary in that matchup. So Bruce Brown might start against a smaller type of fast team in the playoffs as your nominal small ball center, even though he's 6'3". And I think in a lot of matchups, DeAndre Jordan might start, you know, if you're playing a guy like Embiid. And then, you know, Claxton might start if you're playing against like a rangy type of forward who's playing the center position.
Bam.
In terms of if they were going to just play like your regular team in the playoffs, I think it depends how they use Joe Harris, obviously. I'm assuming he's going to start, right? You would think so in most matchups. They have brought him off the bench a couple times this year. But I would say Claxton should be up there because the way he's played defense on the perimeter, especially against a lot of these guards, like high-level guards, in his second season is really impressive. So I might put him as number one, honestly.
Wow. Above Joe Harris, eh?
Well, assuming Joe Harris is starting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we can sort of guarantee those top four, not just the three, but Harris has to be there just to spread the floor. I mean, it's going to end up being Blake, I think, more so than anyone else. I think he'll end up getting the most minutes because he's come out as like a guy who has something to prove, which is kind of nice for this team. You know how there's always that cliche of, you know, you need that one locker room guy who's like a bad MF-er, who's not going to take shit from other teams, who's going to be like the bully, who's going to push other guys back, who's going to protect his players. Apparently Blake Griffin is trying to take this role by talking trash after he gets like one dunk in a fucking mid-March game. You know what I mean? But someone has to do it, right? And if it has to be Blake Griffin that becomes a quote-unquote enforcer, because you're not going to expect LaMarcus Aldridge to do it. He's way too mild-mannered. Not going to expect DeAndre Jordan because, well, let's face it, no one takes DeAndre Jordan seriously. And, you know, Bruce Brown. I think Blake Griffin's going to end up getting a lot more minutes than anyone else.
So two thoughts on this. I think if you're going to put Vegas odds on it as to who's going to be the guy who gets the most minutes off the bench, I think Brown would probably be the favorite based on how he's played so far this season, how he's fit in. And because, you know, Blake has looked washed for the most part. And, you know, with Blake, I think he's sort of used to being the crash test dummy. because they showed a couple stats, one of the recent games, that he had 2 times the amount of the next guy in terms of getting flagrant fouled over the course of the last 10 seasons. I think he got flagrant fouled like 80 times over the course of the last 10 years. And LeBron was second at 40-something.
That's great.
That just goes to show you that he's used to this role. Like, he's used to getting beat up. So he's somebody who likes to start crap, and he tries to end it, but he's not very good at it, obviously.
So he's low-key one of the most hated players in the league, is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's tough. He's tough.
I mean, Zach Randolph handed him his lunch, in those series against Memphis. Like, he started it all. Those guys wrestling each other. Zach Randolph basically laid out the blueprint as to what to do with Blake, which is put him on the ground.
But I think also just one other thing, too, with, what the Nets were able to do is they just added some depth in the front court bodies, because I think the teams that would possibly give them trouble are teams like Philadelphia and Milwaukee, just because of their size. And you need someone to pick up those fouls. You need someone besides DeAndre. So they added LaMarcus. They added Blake. And these players aren't defensive stoppers, but they're big enough guys to hold their own, to get rebounds, and pick up some fouls. So I can see how they can fit in, because you're not going to put Kyrie or Harden on any of those players. A, they're going to be tired. And B, it's just too big of a mismatch.
I really hope Uncle Jeff Green plays. It'd be a real travesty if he doesn't get, at least 12 minutes a game, you know?
I mean, based on their star power right now, you would have to think that he's their fourth power forward in the pecking order, right?
But he should be their first.
I mean, what I'm saying. Besides KD.
Yeah, KD doesn't count.
Besides KD.
I'm just testing how much you like Jeff Green right now. I think it's a lot, so.
Not more than Kevin Durant. Okay, maybe more than, Kyrie Irving and James Harden, though.
Just making sure.
Yeah. No, Jeff Green is great, man. Jeff Green is that guy on every team that you just need. He fits everywhere. Seamlessly everywhere. It's kind of like a Jay Crowder.
Unless you actually need him to be relied upon, then he shrinks.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, besides that part. Other than the consistency part, fits in seamlessly everywhere he goes.
Yes. Because that's not important at all.
Nah, who needs that? But you know who is consistent, Josh? Your Phoenix Suns. These guys are just rolling behind your favorite player, Chris Paul. Can you believe it? Did you really see the Suns coming as, the second seed in the West right now?
Did I not call them as a top 3 or 4 seed before the season started? Oh, wait, yes, I did. Thank you very much. And yes, of course they're rolling. They got a really good team. Monty Williams has shown that he's a very good coach. And they have a system. They have a way that they play. Everyone has bought into their role. Torrey Craig has come in, and he's provided exactly what they need off the bench. And he's in a lot of their, end-of-game defensive units as well. And they've been really tough to score on in those situations as well. And he's providing scoring, too, which is not something you'd expect. But, he showed in Denver he's a very good cutter off of Jokic, and he's brought that to Phoenix as well, because they're very good at back cutting as well. And they just play a bunch of different styles, and they're hard to match up against most teams.
Also, hold on, before you go, Raj, F Coach Bud, man. How are you going to bring in Torrey Craig as your main defensive stopper behind Jrue Holiday and then not play the guy? What is this nonsense? I don't believe it. It's just absurd.
Yeah, I just think Bud is going to bud. And honestly, there's going to be another season where I know we're not talking about Milwaukee, but I don't foresee anything changing with this Milwaukee team. But you know what? They did pick up Torrey Craig, and they needed another wing defender, and they got one in Craig. And Josh, you're right. I'm waiting for the Chris Paul highlight reel of how good he is and you praising him. But I'm sure that will come eventually. But I think the big player that's really turned it around is Ayton. And I don't think he was necessarily bad last year. He just didn't really play because of, obviously,
steroids.
Steroids and then the injury with his ankles. So he's really turned it up a notch. And he's playing good basketball. And he's playing like the Suns expected him to do in his third season. And honestly, I think the Suns team is a team that no team wants to face, but I don't think they're going to be a team that's going to be contending for a title, unlike the real team at the top of the West.
Oh, Utah?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, I'm assuming it's Utah.
Of course it's Utah.
Do you actually think Utah can contend for a title, Raj? Like a legitimate title contender on the likes of, you know, the Lakers or the Nets at this point?
I would say they could make it to the finals.
Wow.
Like it's completely possible, especially because the Clippers aren't playing their best basketball right now. And they have to figure it out in terms of playmaking. And Rondo really has to have a decent impact.
But the Clippers just signed DeMarcus Cousins, you know. Pending a physical, DeMarcus Cousins is going to be their third center.
That's not bad. Like, honestly, like, I know he hasn't played well this year and everything, but, you know, if Serge Ibaka is going to be out for a little while and they just want to rest him throughout the regular season, then, you know, why not take a shot and see what you got in Cousins?
It's yeah, a why not flyer on him. Yeah. And to be honest, I think DeMarcus deserves to play on every team in the Western Conference at this point.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but I think the thing with Utah is they have continuity. They're playing good basketball throughout the season, and having chemistry and knowing your role and knowing the rotations and rhythm, like Josh, you mentioned earlier, is huge. And I think it's hard to argue against the fact that they have good rhythm, they have a good system, players know their role. Hopefully, they end up in good matchups and they don't have to go through both the LA teams. But I think a situation where if they're able to make it to the conference finals and having to play the winner of one of the LA matchups, it's possible they can make the finals.
It's possible, but I still don't like them as the favorites. I don't even think they're top two. Maybe
they're ahead of Phoenix, though.
I might even take Denver over them, to be honest.
They're ahead of Phoenix, though.
Yeah, they're ahead of Phoenix. I mean, Phoenix, going into the season, people expected them to be a playoff team. And probably bow out in round one. They didn't really expect them to be this good, obviously. But I think Phoenix now is like a round two team. And I think Utah's ceiling is conference finals. I don't really see them being able to get to the finals, no matter who they play.
That's interesting. I mean, so you guys mentioned Denver. Where would you slot Denver into this conversation? If you think Utah is conference title contender, Phoenix is a second round team, where would you put the Nuggets?
To me, the Nuggets are a conference finals team, potentially, depending on the matchups and, you know, how high up they can get in the standings. And if, you know, like Raj mentioned, they can avoid playing both LA teams early. I mean, there is a chance that LA, the Lakers, ends up in the 7-8 seed, right? And then if you're the second seed Denver team and you have to play them in round one, that could be a problem. But, I mean, in round two, I like them over Utah if they play each other again, if that somehow happened, which doesn't seem likely now with the you know, the current seedings. But, I mean, it is possible if they end up in number four, I guess. But I would still take them over Utah, to be honest. And I might even take them over the Clippers.
I would take the Nuggets over the Clippers. This Nuggets iteration, I would take over the Clippers because this Clippers team, man, without any ball handling or playmaking, I don't know, man. They're not it this year.
Yeah, they're not. Honestly, I think both LA teams, obviously with the injuries with the Lakers, but I think both LA teams are not as good as they were, or not as dominant, let's say, in the West. And I think the difference for me is the Jazz, I would actually take over the Nuggets, because I think the Jazz were very close. They were a few possessions away from beating the Nuggets, or their one insane scorching hot Jamal Murray away from completely demolishing the Nuggets.
Hold on. But they were also a scorching hot Donovan Mitchell to scorch the Nuggets too. You know, it goes both ways.
Yeah, it goes both ways, but they were very close. And honestly, I think at this point, the fact that they have a bit more continuity than the Nuggets, and I think the Nuggets' main issue is, I think Jokic is playing a lot of minutes, which is good. He's playing himself into shape, but I don't want to be in a situation where he's fatigued going into the playoffs. Like, you want a well-rested, a well-energized Jokic, and he's playing like 35 to 40 minutes, and this Jazz team is, most of the nights, dominating their matchups. They're playing their lineups. They have their rotations down, and they're shooting lights out. Like, obviously, that can be hit or miss in the playoff series, but, like, I'm taking the Jazz over the Nuggets if the playoffs started tomorrow.
The problem with Utah is they almost never have the best player in the series, especially later in the playoffs. And that's something most of the time you do need in order to make it to the finals and actually win the championship. So that's one of the main reasons. I think Denver and Utah are very close, but Jokic is by far the best player in that series. That's why I would take him. And plus, you know, now with Aaron Gordon on the team, Denver's team just looks like it just works now. Like, they have a lot of depth behind him now, being able to play Millsap off the bench now. And then you can either choose to play JaMychal Green or JaVale, depending on the matchup, behind Jokic, which is nice. Because JaMychal Green's a solid, like, third big, you know? Or even a guy that can come in, just play, like, 10 minutes a game. He's ready for any role. So yeah. The only difference with, you know, what Denver was doing before and now, I mean, it's not really a difference, actually. It's just Will Barton sucks.
Will Barton is absolutely horrible. Like, we were shooting the ball around last week, or not even last week, yesterday, and I was like, hey, Peter, you're like Will Barton, and I think Peter almost threw up in his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, that's just rude, you know? But, I mean, he's not the worst, okay? Let's just slow down. He's not the worst. If Will's role on this team as a not secondary ball handler, right, like, it's obvious that the ball always runs through Jokic or Murray, no matter what. So if Will Barton is there as the third ball handler slash playmaker?
No. You're missing out on it, man. The last few games or the last month or so, like, Porter's been that guy. That's what they need to do. They need to make sure that Porter is number three, set in stone. Put in the, you know, it's not even a debate anymore. I'll be bringing that up during Stats Corner as well, but that's a little tease right there. But Michael Porter Jr. needs to be number three with a bullet. And Barton just needs to be number five in that lineup. And if he doesn't want to be that guy, then bring him off the bench and then start PJ Dozier or start Monte Morris, depending on the matchup.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is, I think Will Barton's definitely a guy off the bench, a six-man kind of player who tries to provide some scoring. And he needs the ball in his hand. Like, in his hand, he's not really as much of a playmaker as the other options on that team.
Though it is nice to have 3 6-foot-7-plus guys on the wing and be able to switch every screen. That's one of the things that's helped Denver's defense since Gordon's been in, you know, in the fold the last two games. Is like they've pretty much switched everything besides the Jokic pick and rolls, and it's been pretty seamless so far. So I can see why they start him for defensive purposes, but he just needs to stop taking off the dribble shots. I think in the last five games, he had two games where he was 0-for. He was 0-for-8 in one game and 0-for-9 in the other. So he needs to stop shooting the ball off the dribble. Just be a spot-up
this
guy.
This I agree with. I do not want him shooting the ball off the dribble. But as a stand-in-the-corner guy, not bad. With a bigger defensive role, I like it. Because someone's got to cover those versatile wings if Harris can't be there, right?
Well, that's Gordon now.
Yeah, but you're not going to put like Aaron Gordon on guys like Donovan Mitchell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, because Harris is the guy who locked up Mitchell last year. Locked up, quote in quotations, obviously. But
let him
before
go for
Harris
like
came
50
back to
and
the playoffs, you know, Denver was sort of just stuck in shit with Mitchell. They couldn't do a thing against him.
I think the biggest thing with Denver now is they're trying to get teams later in the shot clock by switching all these screens. Sort of like what Brooklyn's done the entire season. And, you know, once you keep switching screens, then the guy has to, whoever the ball handler is, has to go ISO against you. And then you can load up on the guy. So if they can continue to make that work, then they're a very dangerous team. But, you know, if Barton accepts his role as, like, a defensive player, that's yet to be determined.
Oh, man. All right. Quickly, Raj, who do you have coming out of the West as of right now?
Right now, if the playoffs started tomorrow, I would say...
Assuming full health for everybody.
Okay, well, then that changes up. That's tough. I would probably say I would have the Lakers if they were in full health.
Okay, and follow-up question. Who will be the best team in Texas?
It's going to have to be the Houston Rockets. I have to double down. I'm just kidding. I'm going to have to fucking eat my own shit there and say that it's going to be the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow, that took an aggressive turn. Damn. Josh, who's coming out of the West?
I mean, if everyone's healthy, the Lakers, but I think that this year might be an outlier year where I don't think both of those guys are going to be healthy in the playoffs. I think it's sort of trending that way right now. And, you know, their chemistry isn't quite there and the rotations aren't quite there yet. So they might have like a Clippers type situation where they just don't play enough together in the regular season. And then if one of those guys isn't right come playoff time, they're not good enough, I don't think, if only one of those guys is right or only one of those guys is playing. So right now, I think the Clippers are being underrated right now just because there's been one thing that's changed with their lineup that a lot of people haven't noticed recently because nobody's been watching them because they only have half of a team right now because Paul George sits out every game. Beverly's been out. Serge Ibaka's been out for a while. But Terrence Mann has taken the next step as a player, and he's playing 30 minutes a game on this team. He's producing. Like, he's averaging like 15 points a game off the bench in the last 15 games. And he's handling the ball for them. He's been really good the last quarter of the season. So if he can be a difference maker, that totally changes their team trajectory as another guy that you can count on both sides of the ball, which is something they didn't really have last year. And obviously, if Rondo can be playoff Rondo, then you have a really dangerous team. But that's a lot of ifs, obviously. But I'm going to take the Denver Nuggets right now.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to talk about Luke Kennard finding his jump shot.
I mean, that's just a luxury. If you can get some minutes from him off the bench and he shoots like 60% from three like he has the last couple weeks, then great. But Terrence Mann has taken his spot this year.
I mean, if any player shoots 60% from three, I mean, it's a pretty nice perk to have, no matter who it is.
Problem is he gives it up on the other end. But yeah, as of right now, I'm taking the Denver Nuggets.
The Denver Nuggets, eh? What a familiar team. What a familiar team, guys. I like it. I'm in.
Who do you have? Denver, you have Denver?
Team. Yeah, well, obviously. I had the Lakers at the beginning of the year, but I didn't. Honestly, I didn't think Jokic would show up in shape, and that's a pretty big move. He also got married, so you know how these guys are in their personal lives. When they're happy, it shows on the court.
Oh, okay, hold on a second. Has there been any reporting as to whether he's going to have a kid in the playoffs?
In the next 2 months or 3 months? I don't think so. His wife does not look pregnant at all. She might be, and she might just not be showing it because of all those layers that you got to wear in Denver, but, you know, I don't think she's pregnant.
I mean, if he can get the Fred VanVleet bump, I would definitely put Denver as the favorites this year. But
basically, anyone who becomes a father in the playoffs is going to be the favorite.
Yeah, 100%. I think this year might actually be, like, the Dirk year for Jokic, though. Like, he's having one of the best offensive seasons ever, and defensively, he's been above average. So if he can do that the entire season, why not?
And he's rocking out a 33.87 PER. Look at that usage. Jesus Christ. All right, Josh, let's move on. Give us some stats corner.
So I'm just going to hit you with some stats, first of all, going back to the whole Porter thing. So in terms of the Jokic, Murray, Porter, Gordon foursome as of right now in the first two games, they've played 43 minutes
together.
Leave out
Will.
Oh, of course.
Just play four asides.
He ruins all the lineups, so. I mean, with those four together, as a foursome, they have a 131 offensive rating and a 94 defensive rating. And just to give you some context, the best defenses in the NBA generally hover around like 104 for defensive rating. So they have a total net rating of 37 so far, which is pretty good. And Michael Porter Jr. in March, 20.3 points per game, 59% from the field, 53% from the three-point line, and a 70% effective field goal percentage. And he's the first player in Nuggets history to average 20 points per game on a 70-plus percent effective field goal percentage from the field in a calendar month. And league-wide, he's the fourth player in the last 50 seasons to do so. So Michael Porter Jr. has taken the next step as a player, and you hope that he can, you know, consistent going forward, obviously, for the Nuggets' sake. And the other thing I have is one of the college teams is actually older on average than the Oklahoma City Thunder.
So, no way.
And that team is also in Oklahoma.
Wow.
So Oklahoma's college team is older than their NBA team. The average age of the Sooners is 21.2 years, while the Thunder's average is 20.6.
That's
significantly younger.
Pretty crazy.
Shout out to this Thunder team, man. They're running out these young guys and who just don't want to lose. Moses Brown might be one of the best young big men in the league.
Yeah, and Pokuševski brings the age gap down a lot since he's only what, like 12 years old.
Yeah, dude hasn't hit puberty, man.
No, definitely not. Like, you're stronger than he is easily. No. You could probably bench press him.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. I don't think he's ever even hit his calves in a workout before.
I don't think he has calves. No.
I feel like one day, like, he's going to get flagrant fouled, maybe by Blake, and then he's just going to snap in half.
Do you remember when Kevin Durant got drafted? There was a whole thing about him not being able to bench a plate.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
I don't think he still
can. Poku probably can't bench the bar.
Are you saying that Pokuševski is the next KD?
I mean, if he keeps this up, probably not. But he's pretty damn good.
All right, so I got some stuff for you guys now. So the best single season offensive ratings in NBA history by a team are all by teams this season. So can you name the five teams that have put up these offensive ratings thus far?
Offensive ratings.
Yes.
Okay. What about the Dallas Mavericks?
Dallas is not in the top five.
Utah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Utah's at number three now. They used to be number two as of about a week ago.
With that shooting, it's hard to not be.
Okay, how about the Brooklyn Nets?
Brooklyn Nets now have jumped to number two.
The Bucks?
The Bucks are not in the top five.
Well, shit.
What about the 76ers?
76ers are not in the top five.
Okay, okay, this is getting embarrassing. We have five out of the 30 teams. You got to be able to get the
This is top very embarrassing. Teams. You haven't even got number one yet.
Oh, man. The best offense in the league? By far? I'm assuming.
I don't think it's by far anymore.
Is it the Clippers?
We've talked about them on this podcast, yes.
Oh, the
Clippers are number one. And then who is four and five? One of the teams we just talked about. The other team we haven't talked about at all.
Both Clippers led by Reggie Jackson.
Oh, Phoenix?
Yeah. Jackson's been good this year. Phoenix is not in the top five.
There's no way Denver is.
Denver's number four.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that. And one more in the West?
Western Conference playoff team.
That we didn't talk about.
Oh, Portland.
Yes, Portland's at number five. So now we'll go the opposite way. The worst single season defensive ratings in NBA history. Three of the four are currently happening this season. Okay. The other one was the Cavs in 18-19. So who are the three teams that have the worst defensive ratings in the league right now?
Worst defenses in the league right now.
One of them should be super obvious.
Houston?
Shout out to the Sacramento Kings.
Sacramento is number one, yes.
Okay.
And just to give you a hint, one of the five offensive teams.
Timberwolves?
Timberwolves are not in this group.
What? How can a team with Cat not have like the worst defense ever?
How dare you? So, one of the offensive teams is in this group that we mentioned.
Oh, it's the Portland Trailblazers.
Portland's at number two, or bottom two, I should say.
Yeah.
I know my shitty basketball.
All right, so one more?
And the last team started pretty well on defense, and then they've just been tanking it on defense the rest of the season, despite having some pretty good defensive players in their team.
Hmm. I really want to say the Atlanta Hawks. Nope. But
Western Conference team.
Don't say Golden State?
Nope. What team has maybe the best rising star in the NBA?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, correct. Yeah. They're at bottom four, number four. And then I got one last thing for you guys. So my last one is, you know, talking about Toronto, who has been the second worst offensive team, or just team in general, in the clutch this season in terms of plus minus. There's
shout out Siakam.
Yeah, he's blown three of those games, obviously.
So three, I think there's been like four or five.
No, I mean, just mean in terms of like him taking the very last shot. I think he's missed three game winners where they just bounced in and out like five times, which goes to show you that, you know, we're meant to tank this year. But on that note, as the second worst clutch team in the NBA, and clutch is determined by the final 5 minutes, plus or minus 5 points. So who are the best four teams in the NBA in terms of clutch rating thus far?
Denver.
Denver is not in the top four.
The Charlotte Hornets are definitely in the top four.
Correct. They are at number two, and Terry Rozier has been the most clutch player in the NBA this year.
Which is astonishing. Shouts to Wesley Robinson. Yeah.
And lately, Devontae Graham is catching up to him because he's hit some crazy three-pointers.
I think Devontae Graham is like fourth or fifth right now, right?
Yeah, I think he's in the top five now.
No. Give me Portland.
Portland's at number 4. They are 20-7, and Charlotte was 15-5 as of Sunday.
Oof. Clutch teams.
The other two are in the East.
Milwaukee?
Milwaukee is not a clutch team.
Yeah, that's very on brand. Give me Philly.
Philly is number 1 at 19-6 thus far this season.
19-6? Damn.
19-6.
That's impressive.
They're playoff ready.
Yeah. All right, Raj, finish it off here.
The other team in the East.
This one should be obvious.
The Nets aren't in that many close games, are they?
They are.
The Nets are number 3 at 20-7.
Oh, wow. I didn't even expect them to be in any 5-point games. Like, maybe like 5 to 10 overall.
They chill a lot. And especially since KD's been out too, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's
mainly just Harden.
So there is your extended stats corner for the day.
Very nice. Good stuff, man. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. You can find us on all the podcast platforms at Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.